Hi, I'm Gary, and this is episode 203 of EV Musings, a podcast about renewables, electric vehicles, and things that are interesting to electric vehicle owners. On the show today, we'll be looking at the unseen benefits of electrification. This season of the podcast is sponsored by ZapMap, the free-to-download app that helps EV drivers search, plan, and pay for their charging. Before we start, I wanted to remind you we'll be chatting in a couple of weeks with a bona fide climate scientist about anthropogenic climate change, climate denial, and how carbon, something that makes up 0.048% of our atmosphere, can have such a huge impact. So stay tuned for that. Our main topic of discussion today is electrification. More specifically, the benefits, often unseen or unheralded, that come along with going electric with your car or van. You can leverage cheap overnight electricity tariffs. This means that you can put your heat pump heat up overnight if you have a heat pump, and dry clothes without needing a dryer. Or is that just me? You can also leverage energy saving sessions, otherwise known as demand management, which is something that you just can't do with gas. Now, on the topic of gas, my mother is with British Gas for her sins for her electricity. Now, I've tried to get her to move across, but the perceived pain of movement outweighs the benefit, despite the fact she complains about them regularly. On Sundays, she gets something like 4 hours of electricity at half price under a specific British Gas scheme. This isn't connected with any other published national grid demand reduction scheme, but she uses it to do a week's washing and tumble drying, as well as putting her dishwasher on. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about these saver sessions because they do offer a great opportunity for those of us who can take advantage of them, with things like demand reduction, batteries and solar panels. Now, I recognise that this isn't everyone, but it's always worth being aware of these things, as it then becomes an incentive to try and move forward with them as and when you move over to an electric vehicle. If I was to go through what our American friends would call Energy 101, it would go something like this. We need a minimum amount of power to keep the lights and heating on as a country, and this is called the base load. Now, on top of that is a variable amount of energy which will depend on what is being called upon at any particular moment in time. In summer, if people have air conditioning units running, this will put a higher demand on the grid. In the evening, when people come home from work, take a power shower, put the oven and the TV on, and cook dinner, that creates a higher demand. The demand is met by a combination of all the sources of power that the national grid can provide. In some cases, this is renewables. It might be nuclear. It might be energy that we imported from Europe along interconnectors which have been installed. Wherever possible, National Grid tries to minimise the amount of energy that's produced by burning coal or methane, the real name for natural gas, and for the rest of this discussion, I'll refer to it as methane. As the UK has virtually phased out coal from the mix, it is essentially only methane we're talking about when we refer to fossil fuel generation. But what we have is two moving targets to try and meet. We have the variable demand that occurs when weather changes and when people's habits change, i.e. switching from work mode to evening mode. And we also have variable supply, which is related to how much renewable energy is available, how much nuclear is available, and how much methane is needed. Now, as a general rule of thumb, winter evenings between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. are peak demand times. People want their homes to be warm, their dinner to be cooked, and their water to be hot for washing. And that's often also the time when solar power is low and when wind energy can be low. Although it has to be said that recently the big storms we've been having here in the UK have increased the amount of renewable wind energy we're generating to such a point that it's accounting for over 50% of all energy production at times. Also, despite the popularity among certain segments of the energy community, nuclear power isn't dispatchable, i.e. you can't turn it up and down instantly to cope with demand. Yes, you can vary the power output from a nuclear plant, but it takes time and money and usually has to be scheduled in advance. So to make up for the shortfall, the grid calls upon what it's referred to as peaker plants. These are power stations fueled by methane, which burn, create steam, turn generator turbines, and produce electricity. Fun fact, all power generation via fossil fuels produces turbines that spin at 50 hertz, which is why our UK power system is at 50 hertz. Nothing more, nothing less. If you were to graph this demand, you would see the demand for energy peaking between about 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. During the night, when people's heat is generally off, nobody's cooking and the lights are out, the demand drops to a daily low. Now, wouldn't it be great if we could take some of the demand that occurs around the peak time and shift it to take place overnight when the demand is lower and capacity is higher? Well, that's the theory behind saver sessions. And what the saver sessions are meant to do is to encourage people to reduce the amount of energy they are using during the peak times and shift it to later points of the day. When these moves are successful, the graph of energy demand between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. will change, and in many instances, the need to use fossil fuel methane peaker plants will disappear. This means renewables, nuclear, and interconnects can provide the energy needed. As a result, the grid doesn't need to price electricity based on the marginal price of that last kilowatt hour of production, i.e. methane, and the whole grid becomes A, cleaner, and B, cheaper. Now, to incentivize people to do this, the grid have decided to pay people for energy saved at these times. There are numerous ways that this can occur, and one of these is through demand management sessions, or saver sessions, as they're known. Other ways are by incentivizing customers to charge their cars at different times of the day, for example. Now, this can be a tedious process to check your charge and match it against the grid demands and determine whether it's appropriate for you to do that or not. Luckily, you don't have to do that.
So what we do is we connect electric vehicles, batteries, and other assets like heat pumps and electric heating to flexibility markets. So we take advantage of the flexibility potential of these assets to help decarbonize the grid.
That's Carl Bach.
So I'm Carl Bach. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Axel Energy.
So Carl, would you call yourself an energy company or a software company?
Software company.
The principle is very simple. The grid can send signals out to various entities like Axel Energy, telling them that either there's not enough grid power or there's too much grid power. And these entities can take those signals and control different aspects of the power usage. There's many ways to look at this. You will have heard the old adage, the sun doesn't always shine and the wind doesn't always blow, so we can't really rely that much on renewables.
First of all, there is some broad truth to that. So the electricity grid needs to stay in balance every second of every minute of every day of the year. And today, we're predominantly reliant on fossil fuels, on gas power plants that can get ramped up and down to make sure that our electricity supply meets electricity demand in real time. As we decarbonize the grid, that becomes harder because we can't control when the sun shines and the wind blows. And it does mean that the cost and complexity of keeping the electricity grid in balance is rising in lockstep. At the same time, we do have this wave of electrification that I've talked about, such as EVs and other assets. And the nice thing about that is those assets can be used to help manage those issues. So if we're smart about how and when we charge EVs, we can make sure that we charge EVs when the sun's shining or when the wind's blowing. So today in Scotland, we throw away plenty of wind power that we don't have the capacity to move to where electricity is most needed. And EV drivers are getting paid today to soak up that extra wind power by charging their car when that's available. So broadly speaking, this is a real challenge, but we do have the tools available to solve it and to create a low-cost, reliable, decarbonized grid.
As a side note, Scotland is a big proponent of renewables using onshore wind, hydropower, offshore wind, solar PV, and biomass. So much so that on the 26th of January 2024, the Scottish government confirmed that 113% of Scotland's overall electricity consumption in 2022 was from renewable energy sources. It made more than it needed and exported quite a lot of it too. Many listeners to this podcast will have heard of Octopus Energy and the different offerings they provide when it comes to things like saver sessions and intelligent charging tariffs.
So we're not currently working directly with Octopus. So in that sense, you could say that they're a competitor because they offer something relatively similar to their customers. Because the Octopus approach is, at the end of the day, they're an energy supplier and they think of the world through tariffs. So they'll offer the Octopus Go or intelligent Octopus Go tariff. And if you want everything bundled up in tariff, that's great. Of course, there's a trade-off there. So getting cheaper charging overnight means that your electricity will be more expensive in the other hours of the day. For some people, that works well. For others, they prefer to stay on their existing tariff and receive the benefits of EV flexibility as additional revenue, as cash sent to their bank each month.
Extra revenue sounds great, right? So how does that work, Carl?
So let's say you have a PodPoint charger in your home, and PodPoint is one of our clients. So PodPoint may tell you that, you know, based on where you live, there's a local constraint on that grid, and that your PodPoint charger can help you manage those local constraints, and you'll get paid for that participation. So you'll see an offering maybe by email from PodPoint or in the PodPoint app. You'll say, yes, that sounds great. Sign me up. You'll click a button and it'll all work great. For the most part, you know, you'll see some updates in your app, but you probably won't notice what else is happening. And behind the scenes, we'll be working with PodPoint to make sure that your EV charger is helping and not hurting those local constraints on the grid.
Here's the fundamental difference between Accel Energy and someone like Octopus Energy. With Octopus, they are the 800-pound gorilla in the room. You work with them, you use their software and processes, and you pay their tariffs. With Accel Energy, they're an additional layer of software between the grid and the charge point.
We sit behind the scenes, so we're a service provider for our partners, and in some cases, they want this whole offering to be branded as their own. So in many cases, we don't disclose who we work with. So we're one of the largest providers of EV flexibility in the UK today. So if you see an offering from your EV charger manufacturer, there's a very good chance it's us behind the scenes.
What this means is that if you want to use Accel Energy to help save you money, you can't. They don't appear as a service you can purchase as an end customer.
Today, you'll need to go to your EV charger, your battery, et cetera, go into the app and see if there's any offering for flexibility. If there's not, send them an email, give them a call and ask, why can't I use my EV charger to help the grid? We're rolling out quickly, so we expect this will be available to pretty much everyone quite soon. But of course, this is something that's still quite early. So, you know, we're working as hard as we can to make sure it's available and make sure that everyone's able to benefit from it.
Presumably, all you need from a hardware point of view is a smart meter and a compatible EV charger and all batteries. Is that correct? Or is there other requirements that you need?
No, that's correct.
Yep, I mentioned batteries there. Accel Energy are not just connected with smart chargers, they do batteries as well.
I can give one example here. So we work with Give Energy, which is the largest residential battery company in the UK. They also sell an EV charger. We participate in the Demand Flexibility Service as well as some other programs with Give Energy. That's what Octopus brands is saving sessions. And we had paid out well over £100,000 directly to battery owners by the end of December. And that number is continuing to rise. And just to put that in context, that program started in the start of it.
So there's money to be made there, but how big is the market?
Yeah, so today we're participating in markets with about 12,000 customers, so 12,000 households and businesses. We also support commercial as well. The rated capacity is about 65 megawatts of flexibility across its customers. And of course, what you're actually participating in at any given time varies based on the demands of the specific household and EV, et cetera.
As I sit and think about this, it occurs to me that there's going to be those people out there who think, I can get a saver session via my Octopus Energy account, plus I can leverage the Accel Energy integration via the particular charger I have. How can you stop people gaming the system this way?
That's a very good question and something that happens all the time. The short answer is there's a central registry. So we'll need to register the meter number for a given property that has an EV charger or a battery, or whatever else. And there's a clear rule that that meter can only participate in one program. And if that meter is participating in Octopus's program, they can't participate with us and vice versa.
If I put my economics hat on, I'm thinking, well, hang on, you've got an extra layer in there. So you're obviously going to need some to make some money from this. So what's the incentive for companies like Podpoint to do this and get you involved rather than doing it themselves?
There's a couple of reasons. So first of all, most of these flexibility markets, which is what we're participating in behind the scenes, were designed for large fossil fuel power stations. And one of the implications of that is it tends to mean that you need quite a bit of volume to participate in those markets. There's something like 1 megawatt, perhaps, in a region of the country to actually participate. And many of our clients don't necessarily have the volume themselves to do so. The other bit is, if you think about what these companies are good at, if you're making EV chargers, your focus is make the best hardware for the most competitive price. And that's what you're working on, and that's where you want to win. That's a bit different from building the software and technical integrations into a number of energy markets. So there's also a question of specialization where we can build that back-end infrastructure. And because we're able to provide this to many providers, we can do it at a relatively low cost so that they're able to participate in markets without going through the development work themselves.
As we've already discussed, Accel Energy also work with some of the top battery manufacturers to ensure they can leverage the benefits of home storage during demand management.
Exactly. But let's say we're connected to your battery. That typically means we get a data feed from your inverter. And what we can see based on both the inverter and what's happening at the overall home level is the power curve from the different aspects in your home. And of course, a heat pump has a specific curve, an EV charger has a specific energy curve. And so when we're thinking about how to best optimize that battery to lead to the best results for that individual household, we're taking that into account so that you're still able to use your solar to charge your battery, which is then able to charge your EV once you plug it in later on.
So Carl, what's your business model? How are you, Accel Energy, making money out of this?
So the short answer is we'll participate in these markets by taking tens of thousands of EVs, batteries, et cetera, figuring out what flexibility they have and getting those into market. We'll take a cut of the payment we receive for participating in the markets, and then the rest will get passed on to our partners and ultimately the EV drivers.
So if I was an end customer looking at this, there'd be a couple of questions I would have. Well, not me specifically, because I think I know the answers because of the area I work in. But if I was somebody who was fairly new to this, I'd be thinking, well, how good is this for my battery? Because you're maybe taking energy out, you're maybe putting it in. This is going to degrade it over time. And the other aspect is going to be, well, I want to make sure that when I wake up in the morning, I have 80% in my battery. And I can't guarantee that, can I? So how would you address those questions?
Let's start with the first question. So the vast majority of people who have an EV today are not exporting energy back to the grid, as you know. And so what we're doing is we're not charging the EV anymore. We're just being smart about how and when we charge the car. So that's not putting any additional strain on the battery or on the car. And of course, the car will always be charged in the morning when it's needed as the default. The other thing I'd say there is that the EV driver always maintains control. So a common pattern is we might pause charging during the evening when the grid is very strained, say from 5 to 6 p.m. If somebody needs their car to charge from 5 to 6 p.m., they can go into their app or directly to their charger and press charge now, and their car will charge now. So they don't lose the ability to charge their car if they need it. It'll still be charged in the morning. We're just adding some smarts to how and when to do so.
And when people talk about demand management, primarily they're thinking about high power demand and low supplies, such as in winter when everybody's heating the house, et cetera, et cetera. But the other aspect of this is when we've got high supply and low demand. such as hot days in summer where people don't have any heating on, their cars might be full, they might have solar coming in off the roof. Is there any aspect of that with which you work?
Of course. So there are broadly two ways to look at EV flexibility. There is turn down and turn up. So turn down is pausing charging when there is a constraint on the grid. There's not enough supply to meet demand. Turn up is the opposite, which is what you're saying, which is there is too much supply to meet or that is exceeding demand at that point in time. So in that case, you can get paid to charge your car at that specific time. So I mentioned we're already seeing that in Scotland today from wind power. And that's because this wind power otherwise gets curtailed, which is literally thrown away. So these typically offshore wind farms are getting paid to just let the wind disappear into the ether instead of produce power. And if you think about an EV perspective, in many cases, that happens overnight when the wind farms are chugging along at full capacity, but demand for electricity is quite low. That's a great time to charge an EV. So, of course, that's a win-win.
And we all like win-win situations, don't we? Many thanks to Carl Bach for chatting with us. Now, as Carl said, they don't work directly with the customers, so you can't sign up to use their services, but you can sign up to charger operators who use their services and get paid for letting them manage your charger and battery, which is always nice. This season, we're looking at raising the awareness of carbon literacy with our listeners. One way we're doing that is with a carbon fact as read by carbon literacy trainer Ann Snelson.
Flying is one of the most climate change-inducing things we do. So if you can cut your flights, please do. You may have heard about sustainable aviation fuel, but if we want to keep flying at the rate we're doing, we'd have to transfer half the UK's agricultural lands to crops for flying. And then what on earth would we eat?
It's time for a cool EV or renewable thing to share with your listeners. You'll no doubt be aware that the range of public charger pricing, coupled with the propensity for CPOs to arbitrarily up their prices, often without telling anyone, means that it can be difficult to know who charges what for public EV charging. Well, puzzle no more. Although podcast sponsor ZapMap provides stats showing average pricing across all charge point operators, if you want specific up-to-date pricing for any charge point operator, I recommend you check out a site called ChargeNet. Although the website itself looks like something from the GeoCities web design area, garish colour schemes, lots of text with bold neon background, and a general lack of a clear definable user interface, it does have some great information on there. If you can find the link to it, there's a page that shows the price per kilowatt hour for all the major charge point operators in the UK. It also shows the contactless payment pre-authorisation amount and, where appropriate, the maximum charge speed of the chargers. The beauty is in the colour coding of the information, though. You can see at a glance where the specific network operator sits in the big scheme of things when it comes to pricing. CPOs with a red colour are expensive, amber, moderate, and green, cheap. Well, quote-unquote cheap. It's relative to the rest of the operators. It's a great little site to access for charger pricing information. The EV Musings podcast is sponsored by ZapMap, the go-to app for EV drivers in the UK, which helps that EV drivers search, plan, and pay for their charging. ZapMap is free to download and use, with subscription plans for enhanced features such as using ZapMap in-car, on CarPlay, or Android Auto. And that's the show for today. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. If you want to contact me, I can be emailed at info@evmusings.com. I'm also on Twitter at MusingsEV. If you want to support the podcast and the newsletter, please consider contributing to becoming an EV Musing patron. The link is in the show notes. Don't want to sign up for something on a monthly basis? Well, if you've enjoyed this particular episode, why not buy me a coffee? Go to coffee.com/EVMusings and you can do just that. ko-fi.com/EVMusings. Takes Apple Pay too. I have a couple of ebooks out there if you want something to read on your Kindle. So, you've gone electric. It's available on Amazon worldwide for a measly sum of 99p or equivalent, and it's a great little introduction to living with an electric car. If you're looking for installing solar panels, storage, battery and a heat pump, try So You've Gone Renewable, also available on Amazon for the same 99p. And if you've got Amazon Prime and you can use the Kindle lending library, you can read them for nothing. Why not check them both out? Links for everything we've talked about in the podcast today are in the description. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe. It's available on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Please leave a review. It helps raise our visibility and extend our reach in search engines. If you've reached this part of the podcast and are still listening, thank you. Why not let me know you've got to this point by tweeting me at MusingsEV with the words, "Power at the axle, man." Hashtag, if you know, you know, nothing else. Thanks as always to my co-founder, Simon. You know, he's building up quite an inventory of different personal electric vehicles. He's had the electric skateboard, the electric one wheel, several electric unicycles. And I always wonder how he manages to ensure that he knows which one's which, how much it's worth, and whether he should sell or upgrade. It can't be easy, right?
The short answer is there's a central registry.
Thanks for listening. Bye.